Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you came by this morning. We are going to talk again because the problem is so bigger than all of us, teen drug addiction. Drug addiction at any age is very, very, very serious. The word addiction all on its own is scary. Addiction means something that has taken over your life, something that no longer allows you or your brain or your heart or your soul to make its own decisions. It takes over you, and you no longer make good judgment calls on your time, your money, your energy, anything. In particular, it takes a toll on your loved ones, the people who care so much about you, and they watch you, and they know what's happening, and they see the spiral, and there's nothing they can do. Imagine the feeling of parents today with all the problems that are out there, just the problems we talk about on this show. The bullying, the peer pressure, the sex, the exploitiveness of our young people. All of those things, you put drugs in the mix. And let me tell you something. That's the worst biscuit you're ever going to make. You cannot get involved with something, anything, that takes over your life. Now, we all know that addictions come in many shapes, sizes, forms. There is chemical addiction. There is alcohol addiction. There are gambling addictions. There are sexual perversion addictions. There are shopping addictions. The other day we talked about hoarding, and we realized that there's a lot of people out there who have actually filled their homes to such a degree of garbage and stuff that there's no longer any place for them to sleep. In most cases, they've lost the use of their kitchen and their bathrooms, and forget the living room. There's no such thing as a living room. So again, addictions come in all sizes, shapes, and forms. But imagine you have a young person that's just going into adulthood, that has spent the last 10 years, 11 years in school, learning reading, writing, and arithmetic, learning how to play well with others, learning the social graces, we hope. But along with all that stuff, they've also learned all the other stuff that's out there for our young people to be involved in. And in the beginning, what I find and what I know for a fact, it's all about just having a good time. It's all about fitting in, partying with everybody, and knowing you're a part of the in crowd. I remember it, and I'm 65. My mother told stories about it, and if she were alive today, she'd be almost 90. So it's not anything new. It's something that's been here forever. But now it's evolved, thank you, to chemicals and to people who, instead of putting their great minds to work in a thing that will benefit all of us, they've put their minds and their intellect into the job of creating things that kill us. Sad, I know, but that's the truth. I'm going to open up some callers this morning. I have a young woman who is, I hope, going to talk a little bit about what she's going through right now with her own child, and she has other children. And I can relate because I've been through it, and I'm still going through it. And I've also invited in Shelley, who has called in now. I brought her in. So good morning, ladies. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
Good morning, Rainey.
Good morning. We we have a real epidemic here, a major, major epidemic. And over the past few weeks, I think all three of us have kind of examined what's available out there. We've talked to a lot of people. I actually had a lady in my home yesterday who I hope will be on the show very soon, who talked about her own personal journey through addiction. And she came out on the other side. And that's a story that you don't hear a lot. Well, let me say this. It's a story you don't hear enough.
Jeannie, can I interrupt you? I'm getting a lot of feedback while you're talking.
Mm-hmm. I hear a little something, but not a lot.
Yeah, it's like
I'm not
very
on
loud.
Speakerphone either.
Yeah, I didn't hear it until you brought the two of us in, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hearing fine so far.
Okay. Do you have a radio on near you, Elise?
No, but I'm hearing fine.
Okay. All right. Shell, do you have a radio or TV on?
No. No, it almost sounds like you're double talking. But like you're saying
like
what you're saying
echo?
And then it like an echo.
Mhm. I don't hear it either. So I don't know I hear a little bit. It sounds like a squeaky noise in the background, but it's nothing that is that I recognize.
Okay.
Why don't you try to call in again and see if you get a better connection?
Cool. Sounds good. I'll call right back.
Okay. All right, dear. So I think the deal is here that we need to talk again at length about what avenues to send some of our parents on, because what we did find out, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that there's not a lot of options for teenagers. There are some, but there are some that are kind of scary and some that are kind of antiquated and, I don't know, sound like really old-time, throw them in a cellar until they with a bowl of water until they get their shit together. And I don't think any of us want to do that to our children, because we know that if they're in the middle of something like this, they're already in trouble. Elise, you want to share with everybody some of the things you've learned on this journey?
Oh, boy. Where do I begin? I mean, the journey has only just begun. And it's not a fun journey, I can say that. It's something that you're discovering as you go, and you kind of are pretty appalled as you go. My middle schooler, you know, you mentioned that I have other children, and it is a known fact that the addict affects other people's lives greatly. And my middle son came home yesterday with something called the Marchman Act. Now, several months ago, I never heard of that, had no idea what it is. But basically, this is when you throw your hands up in the air and you let the state take over. And you literally have to go down to West Palm Beach, fill out forms, you know, that you're basically signing your control, complete 100% control over to the state to take care of your child who is addicted, who, like you said, has lost control, is not making good decisions, so on and so forth. And he came home with this from a gentleman at the school who the school hires through the data center, which is one of the locations where you can go for outpatient help, but it's not an inpatient rehab. And my point with this is that my middle son, who's supposed to be getting help, being coached through this, through a professional, is just being egged on, and his ire, his anger is just climbing and climbing, which is not helping the situation. So here we have one child who is lost on trying, you know, all drugs and alcohol, whatever he's doing, and the other son is completely against this, screaming at us, like, how are you letting this go on? So my husband and I are just, in addition to going through not being able to find help for our son who is addicted, we're also having trouble with our other child who is just literally freaking out about all of this. So
right.
I'm basically getting it from all angles.
Well, you know, one of the things that I want to make clear before we go any further is I have done, I found several different articles about the Marchman Act. And I want to read, apparently it's different in each state. And the article that I pulled up or chose to read today applies only to the state of Florida. A Marchman Act is a means of providing an individual in need of substance abuse services with emergency services and temporary detention for substance abuse evaluation and treatment when required, either on a voluntary or involuntary basis. A voluntary admission is when a person who wishes to enter treatment for substance abuse applies to a service provider for voluntary admission. An involuntary admission is when there is good faith reason to believe the person is substance abuse impaired and, because of such impairment, has lost the power of self-control with respect to substance abuse, and either has inflicted, attempted, or threatened to inflict, or, unless admitted, is likely to inflict physical harm on himself, herself, or another. Or the person's judgment has been so impaired because of substance abuse that he or she is incapable of appreciating the need for substance abuse services and of making a rational decision in regard to substance abuse services. Now, are there any other criteria to know if a Marchman Act is appropriate? Yes, there is an additional criterion for a voluntary and involuntary Marchman Act that is not included here. For example, a minor may seek voluntary admission for substance abuse services without parental or guardian consent. A law enforcement officer may take a person into protective custody when the minor or adult appears to meet admission criteria and is brought to the attention of the law enforcement or is in a public place. It goes on to say who can file an involuntary Marchman Act petition, and it states that a doctor, the person's spouse or guardian, any relative of the person, the director of a licensed service provider, or the director's designee, or three responsible adults who have personal knowledge of the person's substance abuse impairment, or in the case of a minor, the minor's parent, legal guardian, legal custodian, or licensed service provider can file an involuntary Marchman Act petition. Now, the part that we don't like about this, and you have to really read this to understand the truth, and that is a person may be detained for involuntary assessment and stabilization for a period not to exceed 5 days. And that means that if it's your kid, and say it's not even a 17-year-old, say it's a 14-year-old, because that happens out there equally as often. That means for 5 days, they take your child and put them in a place where there can be any gathering of any kind of people you've ever seen on any street, in any state, in any city, in any small town in the world. And you can put that 14-year-old into that environment. Now,
Rainey?
Yes.
I hate to interrupt you, but I want to say one thing there. I believe from what we looked in and what we were told by the courts, it's 41 days. And that is the problem that I have with it. 5 days is bad enough, but I believe for the Marchman Act, if their assessment is this child is mentally unstable and they want to put him in a mental ward, they have a minimum of 41 days, not 5 days. So that's something we need to look into. I do believe
this is, like I said, this is from the clerk of circuit court here in the state of Florida. And it says in big, extra dark letters that if, you know, how long can a person be held on a Marchman Act? A person may be detained for involuntary assessment and stabilization for a period not to exceed 5 days. Now, I think what you're talking about is after an assessment has been made, and if it's a minor, and the guardians are are told what they suspect, that this child is indeed addicted, has a major problem, then they can keep the child for 41 days for treatment. But I think that the assessment and the stabilization can only be 5 days, and then you have another choice. Now, you might have been told that they would keep your child if he has a major problem for 41 days. But according to this, and according to three others that I read as well, 5 days was the limit. And I know over here at CARP, that's a voluntary place, and they won't usually keep anybody longer than 48 hours, maybe even 3 days, but even that's rare. I think the longest I've ever heard of anybody being kept is 72 hours. Yes.
I believe the Baker Act is 5 days, but the Marchman Act was so scary because when we looked into it, and, you know, they beat these kids down. They're not helping them. I know in our particular case, when our child was Baker acted down in Fort Lauderdale, he got worse while he was at the hospital. And they were withholding any medications, and really they were just keeping him in a room. They were treating him like an animal, and it was making him more upset. I mean, he's been diagnosed at the young age of oppositional defiance disorder, and if you treat him, you know, like he's an animal, he will be an animal. And he's actually a good kid, as you know. It's just You have to know how to treat these people on individual basis, and they don't. They treat them all the same way. You know, this is the way, there's the highway. And it's just, it doesn't help them. That's what I've seen. So giving up my control to a system where I feel it's just they do the opposite of what they need to be doing, I won't do it.
Well, and I don't disagree with you. And I also think that you have to be either pretty much out of the loop or very young to not realize that a program is only as good as the people who are operating it. And, of course, there is no there's no real way to know. If you check into a hotel, you can check into a five-star, five-diamond hotel and expect to be treated like a princess. And the service sucks, the room sucks, the AC doesn't work. A million things could be wrong. We get all that. But the point is that if we know our rights, if we know the way it's supposed to be, then we have an opportunity to fight to make sure that that's what we get. If what I found about the Baker Act, a person may not be detained for more than 72 hours on the Baker Act, and that's if it is an involuntary, which is what the Baker Act is. And if a parent or guardian of a person age 17 or under makes an application for admission to a facility for observation, diagnosis, or treatment, if a person is 18 years or older and they want to turn themselves in, or they can be turned in as what I said about the Marchman Act, by a policeman, by a doctor, by anybody who thinks that, you know, that they need it. I once was so worried about one of my own kids, and he was a long way from 18, and I had him taken to the hospital. And the nurse said to me, we can't do anything with him unless we think he's going to hurt himself. And I said, well, if you let him walk out of here right now, there's no doubt in my mind that he'll get hit by a car or something. So she helped me. She brought in a doctor and said that she heard him say that he was going to hurt himself. And that's how we Baker acted him. So every place is different, and you're always dealing with human beings. And, of course, that lends itself to lots of different, performances, if you will. But the point is that you're right. And if somebody takes your child, but you have the same problem, I don't leave anybody in the hospital, Elise. My husband is 70 years old. When he falls asleep and it's nighttime, I leave. But if he's real sick and can't talk himself, or I've already seen lack of attention, I sit in the damn chair beside him all night.
Yep.
I don't trust anybody with the people I love, because they don't love them. I do.
Right.
So this is a problem, and a lot of times you get awesome attention, awesome service. But go to an old person's home where somebody is bedridden, and they have bed sores. You know why they have bed sores? Because nobody ever moves them.
Yep.
That's right. And because nobody ever puts lotion on them, or because nobody's taking care of them. They're letting them lay in the bed, and as long as they're not screaming or being a nuisance, they pretty much just get ignored. How many times have you walked through a hospital floor and seen trays of food sitting in a room with somebody asleep in the bed, and the tray sits there all damn day?
Yeah.
And nobody feeds that patient in the bed.
That's another whole topic with hospital care.
Yeah, I know. I know. But I mean,
I know
it's comparable. Amazing. You see, it's comparable. And it just, and of course, we've done shows. Shelley and I have done shows about training, about the lack of professionalism in a very professional, or should be a very professional arena. Healthcare, education, court systems. These people need to be educated. These people need to be good people. These people need to give a shit. And in a lot of cases, for whatever reasons, if you talk to them, always interesting to know, they start out like that, and they say the system has beat them down. How many times have you heard somebody say that to you?
Many times.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Of course. But the point is, our kids, I think we really need to know, if we're in a situation like this, which many of us will be in, have been in, will be in again more than likely, you have to know your rights. Before you can fight for somebody, you have to know what your rights are. And, of course, your number one right is to be heard, right? So
right.
That's a very important right. That's one of the most important rights that we have, to be heard, an opportunity to make your case in point. Now, you and your husband fought, I know, to, I wouldn't say to extremes, but in a couple different scenarios. And when you did, you got a little bit more extra attention, didn't you?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I hear what you're saying with what, you know, you've looked into and you've done your research as far as what the time hold is, but they still, at their discretion, have the control. If they feel your son or daughter is not of the right mind, or is acting a little belligerent, or is a little too angry in their book, they have the right to keep that child. And it was at the 72 mark where, you know, they have to let your child go. They started with the nonsense. Oh, well, we have a different doctor that's coming on duty. The other one, you know, had to go somewhere. So then we had to wait over the 72 hours into the next day for the doctor to give an assessment. I mean, there was some kind of nonsense where our son had to wait over that time period. So even though we knew our rights, it still did not come into play where we got our way. We were heard, mm-hmm. but we had to coach our son and say, you can't say anything derogatory. You can't, you have to hold your mouth. Now, isn't that a complete hypocritical coaching to give your child? You want him to be heard. You want somebody to hear his frustrations and work on them. But instead, here we are, the very place that's supposed to be the initial point of help, we're telling him exactly what is opposite of what he needs. Hold your thoughts, hold your anger, hold what's boiling up inside of you, because the longer you boil and fester, they're going to just keep you there. And, you know, the first place was okay. This was here in West Palm, Columbia Hospital. You know, they did do therapy, and there was a fine man there that I had liked that led the therapy sessions. But, you know, all in all, it's a mental ward. And like you see in the movies, it's very much like that. 24/7, uh-huh. They're in the same room. They watch cartoons. You know, there's nothing really special about it. You know, I just
Do they have any structured counseling, group counseling, one-on-one counseling, anything like that?
no one-on-one. It was group counseling, and that was at the first place, Columbia. We were able to see the room that they were in, but when he was Baker acted down in Fort Lauderdale, they wouldn't even let my husband and I go up to see the room. They wouldn't let us see what he was complaining about. You know, he had a lot of complaints about that place. And he literally took his head, and he started talking about suicide, and he took his head into a steel door saying he's going to commit suicide if we didn't get him out of there. Now, he didn't go in wanting to commit suicide. I've never heard him say that, but he also has an aunt who did commit suicide. So the fact that that place was making him so insane and the fact that he escaped, grabbed the doctor's keys, and got out, my husband and I were happy because
wow.
we weren't going to get him out. But
Elise,
look at that.
Elise, when he was in there, I know that they were, you know, that they were trying to get him clean. Were they giving him any alternate drugs while
they were trying
to get him clean from the recreational drugs?
Yeah, they chose to do nothing. But, you know, remember, he's also ADHD, impulsivity, so they should have been giving him something to, you know, something that we told them that his psychiatrist, you know, had him on. But they were just, you know, he's not crazy at all. He's just
problem is I've been doing a lot of research on this, and the ADHD drugs, many of them, suicide is a side effect of the drug, but the issue is if they're already on those drugs, you can't just stop them. So I agree with you that that was very irresponsible that they didn't allow him to take the prescriptions he was taking, because whether it's a good or bad drug, any drug, once you're taking it, when you're talking about the psychotropics, you can't just come off of them. They have very, very severe side effects, and suicidal tendencies is one of them. And what's shocking to me that they wouldn't allow him to take his meds is that that's very well known. That, I mean, I'm a layperson, and I know this. This is something that's in all the literature, so I agree with you that that was very, very irresponsible. But one of the things I'm finding out in the research is that they're discovering now, and I hope that this becomes mainstream very soon, CCHR, which is a nonprofit organization in Florida, they've been doing national research. They're finding that more than 90% of all mental, what are classified as mental illnesses, are actually physiological disorders. In other words, they have a physiological basis that something, some other organ in the body is diseased and manifesting even bipolarism, schizophrenia, ADHD, that these are really physiological illnesses and they're not being treated as physiological illnesses. They're being masked with psychotropic drugs, which only help for a short duration, but it doesn't fix the underlying problem, and that's why people don't progress properly.
Yeah, we haven't seen positive results, you know, when we've gone on different trial drugs. And he was actually in there for abusing the Adderall. So I think their discretion for not giving him that were based on what he was in there for. However, I'm just saying they were, you know, they were withholding his therapy sessions. And, you know, these kids want to talk. And I think it's kind of they are screaming out for help, whether it's mental illness or whether they're just following the pack and they want to fit in and they want to be cool. It's kind of a cornucopia of all that, you know, I think with many of them. I've always known, you know, my son has been different from the time he was young, and they always said if he wasn't medicated by 8 years old, he would seek out his own form of drugs to feel better. And that's basically what's going on. It allows them, you know, a sense of relief and what have you. Plus you couple in the fact that they want to experiment and fit in with the crowd. So when you have that mixture, it's really, it could be a deadly cocktail because these drugs have effects. And, you know, what you just said about the physiological, there's a doctor, Dr. John Taylor, and he does a lot of work with autism and the brain. He feels ADHD is not on the spectrum. For years, it's been considered on the PDD, the pervasive developmental disorder spectrum, which goes along with autism. And they're saying now it's completely separate, and it's a lack of oxygen that gets to the brain in with ADHD and other things with autism. And when you feed the body with enzymes and certain essential fatty acids, you see a big difference. So I've been doing some research on that myself, and it's really interesting about that. And I know that when I
have some additional research on specifically what you're just talking about, so I can share that with you at another time.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot to be said for superfoods from the earth. They do a lot. And as a matter of fact, I read that the children who have ADHD when they're younger are at more of a risk of developing Alzheimer's disease, basically because of that myelin sheath in the brain.
Yes,
and
you're absolutely right about that.
And
yeah,
another thing, the gentleman at the school from the data center who's a really, really dynamite guy, actually, I like him. I just have to speak to him about, you know, handling my other son. But he had told me that there's a new science right now where they're literally, I don't have the information in front of me, but it's some kind of biostim to the brain because they're treating all these, the myriad of things that within the spectrum of mental illness, they're treating them all the same. And so what they're doing now is they're trying to figure out what parts of the brain are affecting certain behaviors so that they can target, target research for what will be specific to a mental health issue for each individualized person. I don't know if that makes any sense, and I wish I had the information in front of me, but it is some kind of new science that they're doing on the brain to basically target areas of the brain and what would be best to help what is wrong with those areas of the brain. So they are starting to do some more research regarding this.
Well,
I think
a lot of this boils down to something that we talk about on this show all the time, and that is the fact that there cannot be one fix for anything, and there isn't one fix for anything. And I think it's interesting that everything that is recorded law-wise out there is not being honored. In a lot of cases, you can't fight every battle that we come across in this life, but this is pretty important. So what is being said here this morning is the fact that I just read what is recorded with the circuit courts about Baker Act and Marchman Act. This tells me that either the operators of this act, the people that carry it out, are not aware of what is written or have vented it to fit their own needs, and maybe it comes from a good place. Don't get me wrong. Maybe they see something and they step in and take over because they think they can help. We always have to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. But if there's one thing I know for sure, that is the fact that if you need help and you reach out for it from any kind of responsible professional place, you are not giving up the right to govern your own child. And I think that fact needs to be stated out there loud and clear. If you take your 17-year-old someplace and expect to get them help and expect the people to work with you and expect things that these people have been trained to do, it does not mean that they take ownership of your car or your anything if you take it in to get fixed. They don't get to keep it, and they don't certainly get to keep your child or make decisions about your child without your input. So that fact, I think, needs to be shouted out loud and clear here today. So in that respect, Elise has already been through that, and I know other people who have been through that, and it always frightens me when affiliations bigger and richer and more in the limelight than I am can step in and take something that belongs to me. And the worst thing that could happen is that they take your child like that. So I agree with you, and I'm glad that this all came to light, and we need to keep on researching about this. And if there's anybody out there listening that's in this field and you have something different to say to us and make us understand that this comes from a good place, we'd like to hear it. I know Elise would like to hear it. I'd like to hear it. And I know Shelley would like to hear it. We need to know what our rights are in regard to this. You give birth to a child. That child is yours unless you've done something to make the rest of the world believe that you don't care enough about that child to take care of them. That's a whole different story. But when a parent is reaching out and looking for help, they should be given help and they should be included in the care of that child. Right, girls?
Yes, absolutely.
Yep.
You know, and we're probably going to have to do a follow-up show specifically on that, because one of the things I found out recently, which is scary, which is a very appropriate word to use, is that now the psychiatric business industry, and I want everybody to realize that this is a trillion-dollar industry, so there's a lot at stake with prescribing psychotropic drugs and stuff like that. And if anybody misses that, then they're not really, really paying attention to the cost of these drugs. But this industry has finally, they're passing a law, I think it goes into effect in January, where all children, without parental permission, by the way, they don't have to get permission from the parents to do this, have to take psychiatric screening now at school to see if they're showing symptoms of ADD or any of these other, what they're saying are mental illnesses, which really aren't, which are really physiological disorders. And if that's the case, there have been random children now removed from school without the parents' permission and put in like mental institutions and put on drugs that didn't have any illnesses, that the child was fine the day before. There are tens of thousands of these cases all over the United States. You think it would never happen here. It's been very commonplace in Germany. But it just started happening here. And some of these stories, once these kids get in these hospitals, the parents can't get them out. So it's something that the American people have to realize is happening. This isn't science fiction. This isn't some sort of this isn't something that should be looked at. That it's not happening, in denial. And the organization that I was talking about.
I think we just lost Shelley. I want to say something about that, because that's the whole reason I wanted to talk about this today, is because you do, in many cases, end up losing your rights, and we can't have that. We can't. We talked about our soldiers this week. That's what we fight for. Many, many years ago, I had a very close friend who had two little girls, and her husband was, for all intents and purposes, psychotic. And he tried to kill her and both of the girls. I testified in court against him, and the courts decided that the girls should be put in a safe house, taken away from their mom, put in a governmental employed lady or foster home. The dad could never find them, and the mom was beside herself. She was very young. She was in her early 20s, as was I, and she did it because she was worried about the safety of her children. One year later, with a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, I had to go to court with her again and help her fight to get custody back of her own children. She did what led her to believe was in the best interest of her children. She believed that they were keeping them safe. And then in order to get them back, even though she never was a part of the problem other than being married to this guy, fight to get them back. And I've never forgotten that. And I think Elise will tell you that early on when we talked about, what you can do and what you can't do, I said you have to be careful, because if you put somebody else in charge, you often lose your rights. And it's an issue. This is a big issue. And this woman, when she did get her children back, I had to be licensed by the New York State Child Care Services They had to come and check my home so that she could keep her job and get her children back. And her little girl was 2 years old, almost three, and was petrified. She would hang on to my neck like a koala bear. And they wanted me to put her on this special children's bus every morning. I did it one morning. I came back in my house devastated and called them, and I said, I will not put her on that bus again. She was so afraid. I said, let me keep her. Let me show her that we love her. Let her have her mommy at night, me during the day, all the other kids during the day, and see if we can't bring her back to where you think. Because now this woman's rights were gone. They didn't care what I thought at all. But I fought to keep her back in my house for 3 months, and then they reassessed her and said she didn't have to go to this special school. And this was many, many years ago. This was in the early 70s. And
it's
now,
actually gotten much worse since then.
I know. It's gotten worse.
This really started right after World War I is when the psychiatric industry started taking emotional attributes and labeling them as mental illnesses. Some things are just personality traits. Some of the more pervasive type of personality traits, you know, where somebody is being mean or harmful to somebody else, even in some of those cases, they're not really mental illnesses. They're still a physiological foundation. But the bottom line is that they started incarcerating children without parental permission. This started, you know, like right after World War I. It became really, really commonplace after World War II, where it was happening very common. People started railing against it. It died down. And I think there's been this lull. It's still been happening over the last, you know, 60-70 years, but it hasn't been very, very commonplace. It's now rearing its ugly head again. And this is something that the American population has to be aware of and not sit back and just allow it to happen again. Because people are going to be having their children taken out of school, put in these hospitals, and it's really, really rare that somebody has an actual mental illness where they would need to be institutionalized. In most cases, even with extreme violent behavior, there are other ways to deal with it. And that's what I'm finding out in my research, and it's actually kind of exciting, but most people don't know about these solutions because they're not put out there. They would be in opposition to the pharmaceutical injuries solution of psychotropic drugs.
Well,
pretty scary.
I actually teach in the school district. I substitute teach, but I used to work for Title I services and work with a lot of the ADHD kids and the kids that maybe were struggling. And I would sit in the lunchroom and hear the teachers, and they're frustrated because they're not paid a lot, and then they have to deal with the kids that make the classroom situation harder. And I know for my own son, I had to fight tooth and nail throughout middle school for him to, you know, just be treated normally, but, you know, learn a little different. A lot of these kids are kinesthetic learners, and instead of just labeling them, all they need is maybe they're a visual learner as opposed to auditory. Or, you know, they just learn different, and that's really scary what you're saying, Shelley, because that's going to be crazy in South Florida. There's going to be a lot of kids being pulled out left and right.
I know. This organization is in South Florida, and that's why they're targeting a lot of lectures and seminars and things like that in the area, because you're right, this is a state that's going to really be heavy hit by this type of activity.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that's going to go over too well.
What do you think we can do about this?
Just educate people. That's the main thing. Educate people as to what other options there are. I mean, I've told the story before about my nephew who was very, very violent in school. He had terrible anger issues. He couldn't sit in class. They wanted to put him on drugs. Now, this is going back 20 years ago. All right, and it's worse now, okay? Thank God my sister had a pediatrician who was not a pill doctor. He was actually very holistic in nature, although he was a medical doctor. And all he did was change my nephew's diet. He cleaned his diet up. He took sugar and preservatives out of his diet. And within 2 weeks, his personality completely changed. He did not have the ability to metabolize sugar and preservatives. So it made him nuts. It really made him act out very badly. He turned into an angel. And they tested it out, and they gave him like a Twinkie after a couple of weeks. And instantly, within 10 minutes of eating the Twinkie, he went right back into his violent behavior. He got angry. His face got all flushed red and everything. And so my sister just kept him on what was called a clean diet. She found other ways of giving him sweets that had like stevia in them or non-sugar sweeteners that weren't artificial, things like that. But it was a real journey for my sister. She had to study diet. She had to study nutrition and feed him things that kept him in a good place. And he did really well. He's a really, really smart guy. He's a sweet man. But for a short time there, he acted like a monster. And if the system had gotten a hold of him, they would have ruined him.
Mm-hmm. Well, they would have made him shut up. See, that seems to be our MO, just like what Elise said a few minutes ago. You've got a kid that needs to empty out, and we've talked about this a couple times in a couple other meetings that Elise and I have been a part of this week, and it's all about being able to unload and talk. And some of your most balanced, easiest going people that you think don't have a care in the world because they always seem to go with the flow, if you give them an opportunity to talk and really listen to them, they want that. And a teenager, with all the things a teenager has to face today, oh my good God, they need talk. Years 4 years ago, when I first started doing this, one of the biggest important things that all my teenagers said to me is, we need a place to vent, Grandma. I said, well, what about peer counseling? I thought that was an awesome idea. Yeah, peer counselors are always kids that are smarter than you and they act like it. Okay, sure. I get that. A grade up, a little bit better GPA, and they get to come in and lord it over you. I can see why a teenager wouldn't like that. So I suggested way back then that they get an opportunity 15 minutes before they do anything else in the morning to sit privately, have pair them off, let them pick their own partner, somebody they relate to, and either 7.5 minutes you get to unload and 7.5 minutes I get to unload, or 15 minutes for the whole morning and then the next day the next one gets to unload something to give them an opportunity to get rid of the anger that's in them from what's going on in their life, because they're not adults. They don't know what to do with it. So it manifests itself in other ways. And a lot of times it's drug use to hide the fact that they're pissed off, or hide the fact that they're sad, or hide the fact that they're hurt, because maybe they walked into the room and you're cooking a meal and they say, I got to talk to you right now, Mom. And you turn around and say, can't you see that I'm busy? Totally harmless conversation, right? I mean, you can even see that happening on Father Knows Best. However, that day, in that moment, that meant everything. That meant everything.
Right.
So there's a lot to be said for talking and conversation and being able to unload what is hurting you. I mean, that's why we poop, for God's sakes. That's why we poop.
Yeah. Yep.
Right?
Yep. Yep, get the toxins out.
That's funny.
Elise, what about...
But you know,
what
it would
about,
make more sense with the school counselors, the other students. It would make a lot more sense for them to take students that had gone through something and offer them, say, look, you're going through this. We're going to help you get through it. And then we would like you to then help other kids. A lot of times when a child or even an adult is shown that something they went through can now help other people, it's very uplifting to them. It gives them a purpose. Wouldn't it be great to have the student counselors be somebody who was where you were, somebody who had gotten in trouble the year before, and now they're sitting there talking to you, so then you wouldn't have that lording over. It would be like an alcoholic going to a recovering alcoholic for counseling. It would have a totally different connection with them. You know, the student would say, yeah, you know, last year I was getting in all kinds of trouble, and listen, you're going to be fine. This is what I went through, you know, and they could, the kids would identify with it more.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion.
Yeah, I think in one way that would be great. I'm not sure how easily that would work. In theory, it sounds awesome. I'm sitting here thinking to myself, okay, so what do? You say to a classroom of eighth graders that you want to counsel seventh graders. Okay, which one of you kids was a pain in the ass last year, and which one of you wasn't? I'm not sure.
In the records. I don't think you have to leave it up to the kids. I think as you're counseling that child, you say, look, now that you're in a better place, would you want to be a student counselor next year because you've come so far? And what it does is it helps both. It helps the kid who was problematic that year because now you're instilling a purpose in them. When people find they have a purpose, it's very empowering. And I've seen this a couple of times, not in a formal situation like that, but I had a kid that I knew personally that was struggling. And once they were put in a position of having that kind of responsibility, it, like, changed them. But it changed them in a good way. They, like, rose to that new responsibility because all of a sudden they saw this purpose for themselves.
Well, I'll go along with that totally because I think in a lot of different – I mean, I've done that in the workplace, Shell.
Exactly.
I've taken somebody I really like and I think had something to offer, but whatever they were doing in our workplace, it wasn't up to par, it wasn't good, and I've changed them around and empowered them to take over something and handle more responsibilities, and that's good for anybody. That's good for me, for God's sakes. I mean, you know, I'm better when I'm teaching than when I'm learning, always.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably true of all of us. I do think it would be a plus, like I did 4 years ago. But I honestly couldn't get anybody to listen. And I did talk. I spent like a forum in a whole day with police officers, teachers, administrative people in Hollywood. And that's where I received my my recognition plaque in regard to being an awareness advocate in regard to what's going on out there. And the results of that meeting were incredibly positive. And even when I said, stop handing out so much homework, I said, you're ruining the family dynamics with all this damn homework. You're making, you walk in the door with all your books and look at your mother or your father and say, you're going to help me, and they've still got to make dinner, do a load of laundry, maybe finish up something that they didn't get to do during the day. And all of a sudden, the night hours don't become social or friendly or loving. They become antagonistic because now you're pissed because you got to use up your time to do what you think the teacher should have done during the day, and your kid doesn't really know how to do the homework, so now you're reading the textbook to figure out what they're supposed to do. It's not good. And every teacher at those meetings agreed with me, every one of them. And yet, AJ's in first grade and has homework every single night, every single night. So I don't know. There's so much, and because I'm not in that arena, I sometimes shut myself up because I don't want to judge something that I may not have the whole story about. And
well, no, I agree with you on that because I had told you just recently my 10-year-old niece came over here and I helped her with a school project. Now everybody knows you've said it. I'm writing a book right now, so I understand a lot of things having to do with creating, you know, written documents. But my niece, her mother, didn't understand the instructions from the teacher. My sister didn't understand the instructions for the teacher. I read it. I had to read the instructions twice before I grasped what she was trying to instruct the kids to do. The point is, none of the kids could have done this without assistance from their parents. And I think that's ludicrous. it should be age appropriate. So I helped her create this project, but I made her do it. I didn't do it for her. And I explained to her, once I realized what the instructions meant, I explained it to my great niece, and she did a wonderful job with it, and she did end up doing it herself. But I was sitting there scratching my head saying, she could never have done that project without the assistance from an adult, you know, because it took three adults to figure out what the instructions meant. They were very technical.
Yeah, well, and we run into that all the time. And Josh and Austin and Crystal are all in high school, and they get on my computer and do a lot of their homework because a lot mm-hmm. of their homework has to do with research and things like that. But first grade, and AJ is given, and I do this for him here, so I'm not against it, but my daughter was like, well, Mom, that's dumb. That doesn't, you know, we could have fixed that. And I said, we're not supposed to. This is his lesson. I could have done, with his thoughts, I could have put an adorable story together. I'm 65. I have a better story than him. I maybe even could have drawn the characters a little better. I'm not sure about that one, but it's possible. But I didn't. I said, no, this is for him. And
right.
And parents that do all these things like that are doing an injustice for their child. But again, to give a child one thing in first grade that they have to work on during the week, just so that mom and dad can see where they're at academically, I think is fine. But to give them homework, I mean homework every night, like five copy sheets of math and three pages to do of spelling and all this kind of stuff, I think sometimes AJ comes home and he's bouncing off the walls. Well, that's another thing. You know, they get rewarded with candy in elementary school.
Which is ludicrous.
And sometimes he comes home, and I'm sure that the school bus ride home for that poor bus driver, speaking of needing to be sedated, I mean, I'm sure they must need to be. But this is, I love this topic. I think that we brought up some questions today, though, that need to be answered, and maybe we need to get, the three of us need to get together privately and maybe even write some letters and do something to make some changes here, because something's wrong when you can't ask for help for your 17-year-old child and get the kind of help you need without relinquishing your rights as a parent. And something's wrong when those things aren't available readily without all the bureaucracy so that you're afraid to make that move. These things are not good. We should be trusting, and we should be able to know that if I go to a doctor, he's going to tell me the right thing to do. If I go to a congressman, he's going to lead me in the right direction. If my kids come to me, and my oldest kid is 45 years old, if he asks me a question, I try really hard to make sure that I'm given the right answer, even in our small little world. If one of you girls call me with a problem, I try to make sure that I find out the right answer for you because I care about you. That's what we need out there. We need so much more of it that it's almost scary that there's so little available. So we only have a little bit over a minute left. Would you both like to make a little closing statement?
Well, I agree completely with what you just said. I would love to get together, the three of us, and share our ideas. There's other things that I didn't mention on the show this morning that I'll go over with the two of you privately if we can make that happen.
Okay. I think that's a go. What do you think, Elise?
I'm in. I just have to throw one thing in. When my child was in kindergarten, he went there very excited about reading, and he left kindergarten hating reading because every weekend he had to read a book, do a book report. He had 8 pages of homework every night in kindergarten. He hated school from an early age because of his initial introduction to a teacher that overloaded him with assignments. So I'm right there with you.
Well, so I think, like I said, the teachers that I spent time with were too. So I don't know what happened or what the criteria is to make them have to do what they do, but there must be something. So I want to wish everybody a great hump day. And I hope that you'll all join us tomorrow morning. We have Joel Smith again. We're going to try that again. Last Thursday we had technical difficulties, but he's going to join us again tomorrow and talk about the education arena. So I hope it's an interesting show. Join us. So everybody go out there and give it your best. God bless. We love you, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Shelly. Thank you, Renee.
You're welcome, sweetie. Thanks, girls.